This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour right here at our nation's capital. Here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime, you're tapped in to the youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A couple of the guests will stop by the program before we get out of here. Odyssey NFL insider Jason Lock and Four are going to join us. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Joe DeLeon, lead draft analyst for A to Z Sports. Speaking of the NFL draft, 3 weeks away. 3 weeks away from the NFL draft, the Washington Commanders slated to pick 29th overall. We let you read, or let you hear from, or I read, rather, Field Yates of ESPN.com put together a two-round mock draft, and he had the Commanders going with Nick Emenwori, the safety out of South Carolina, at number 29 overall. And I was asking the question to you all earlier at 1-800-636-1067, asking the question of, is there a position where Washington takes them at 29, you would go, not something I'm a fan of. For me, I think that position is offensive tackle. And I would say early in this draft process, before I understood the depth of the position, I would have said running back would have been one of those positions as well. But now that I've gotten to do a deep dive, the running back position, there are at least, I think out of this draft, you're going to get 12 new starters at running back across the NFL. I think 12 rookie running backs will end up being starters during the 2025 season. It is. And I know we hyperbolize draft classes at times and positions, but it is a loaded class at the running back position. From Ashton Jeanty to Omarion Hampton to the pair of Ohio State running backs to Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, the home run hitter Dylan Sampson out of Tennessee, to Jordan James out of Oregon, R.J. Harvey from UCF, if you're looking for a bruising physical type of back, Damian Martinez out of the University of Miami, Ollie Gordon out of Oklahoma State. Like, it's a really, really good class when it comes to the running back position. So good that Washington should take one at 29 overall? That is what Thor Nordstrom of lead one of the draft analysts for NBC Sports. He joined Grant and Danny and had this to say about Washington taking a running back, and a certain running back in particular, one of the Ohio State backs, Travion Henderson.
And then for that second round pick, there will be a running back available there that is going to steal the job of Mr. Robinson, or, you know, the committee that you guys had there last year, a day one guy who's going to become the bell cow right away.
Wow. Who are some of those backs you like? I know there's a bunch of them. I know you like the Iowa kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, for Washington, I kind of really like the scenario of bringing Travion Henderson home, right? The five-star ballyhoo kid from Virginia, he leaves as a five-star, and then all of a sudden he's dominating for Ohio State as the true freshman, but he had some injuries, and then, of course, they bring in Judkins last year. But the skill set for Travion Henderson is very similar to Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush is who he compared Travion Henderson to. Look, I'm going to just be real. I don't think there's a chance that Henderson is there at 61. I just don't. I love the way this kid runs, man. He runs angry. He breaks tackles. He's got excellent contact balance. I think his best trait in terms of, I don't want to say his best trait, but his most underrated trait, I would say, is his ability to square you up and knock you back in pass pro. Like, I think that is as important as anything. Remember the Falcons game, Chris, when Jaden Daniels got peeled back and we all, I think we were at Tom's Watch Bar for that at National Harbor, almost had a damn heart attack in the building. You could have heard a mouse take a leak on carpet as to how quiet it got when he got peeled back like that, right?
Nah, it was like watching some guy made out of rubber or something.
It was crazy.
The collective holding of everyone's breath in the room at the same time.
Dude, it was scary as hell. It felt like, I got flashbacks to 2012, man. I got flashbacks to 2012 when Robert, that picture that's frozen of Robert bending down for the ball and his knee is like contorted all crazy way. That's the thought process that I had. But the reason that that play happens is because Brian Robinson missed his assignment in pass pro and it led to Jaden Daniels getting pilt back. You won't have to worry about that with old Travion Henderson, someone that specializes in pass pro at the running back position. I don't think he's going to be there at 61, though. I don't. I think there's a real opportunity, a real shot for three running backs to get taken in round one. Ashton Jeanty out of Boise State, Omarion Hampton, and then Travion Henderson. Like, I think that is a real legitimate possibility. And if that was the case, obviously, you know, Washington could take him at 61 like Thor Nordstrom was kind of alluding to. Now, would they take him at 29? That's where it gets interesting. Like, I don't – it depends on who's on the board, I would say. And I may lean towards no because of the depth of the rest of the class. But, like, I think every year in the draft with certain positions, you see, like, a run happen where, like, all it takes is one team taking a running back, and the next thing you know, six out of the next 10 teams are taking a back. Like, that's kind of how it goes. It's very trendy when it comes to the NFL draft. I can see the running back position going that way this year. I can see the edge rusher position, going that way this year. I can see corner potentially going that way this year. But I don't think Henderson is there at 61. And I don't know if I would be comfortable taking him at 29. I'll tell you who I would take at 29 if they fall. If they fall to 29 and they're there, I'm taking him. It's Omarion Hampton, the running back out of UNC. If he falls to 29 and somehow is there for you, I got to sprint the card in. I don't think there is this sizable gap between Omarion Hampton and Ashton Jeanty. I just don't. I would actually prefer Hampton because he's got less tread on the tires when you think about the usage of Ashton Jeanty over the past couple of years. But either or, I think the point is clear that we're trying to make here. Washington is going to take a running back coming up in a couple of weeks in the draft here at the end of the month. Whether it's in the first round, I don't know. Whether it's the second round, I don't know. They will not leave the NFL draft without a running back. The other part of the draft that I think maybe we kind of sleep on in terms of, you know, well, is it a group? Is it a spot where you got to get all of your contributors in the draft, or will you see some UDFAs contribute? Last year Washington had two UDFAs on the final 53. Colson Yankoff at tight end, and then Tyler Owens at safety. So the UDFA market is something else that you got to monitor as well if you are a Commanders fan. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll be joined by our pal Joe DeLeon, lead draft analyst for A to Z Sports. He joins us next here on The Fan.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry blend and orange hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Right now, we continue our conversation leading up to the NFL draft. One of the absolute best covering the NFL draft, our pal Joe DeLeon, who covers the NFL draft and college football for A to Z Sports. What's going on, Joe? How you doing, my brother?
Doing pretty good. We're getting so close to the draft. I can almost taste it. A few weeks away. Can't wait for things to get rolling here towards the end of April.
Yeah, for sure. And we were talking about it earlier in the show, man. The owners' meetings out at the Breakers is kind of where some of the tea continues to get spilt. We're in pro day season right now. I want to ask you about the quarterbacks, man. To me, like, that is the juiciest part of this draft. Right now, to me, it seems like Cam Ward, Joe, a lock to go number one overall. Can you put yourself in the shoes of Andrew Berry and Joe Shane here for a second, talking about 2 and 3 with the Browns and the Giants? I look at the Giants, Joe, and the moves that they made to sign Jameis Winston and to sign Russell Wilson. It almost feels like that takes them out of the Shador Sanders business, right? Unless they're, as I like to say, Joe, Beyonce crazy in love with Shador. It doesn't make sense to bring him into this loaded quarterback room, does it?
No, it doesn't, but my biggest takeaway with both of those signings was that they're incredibly desperate right now. They're panicking. Is the whole purpose of that move, is they need some sort of a backup plan, so much so that they created two backup plans. Yeah. I think that this is the most desperate coach and general manager situation in the NFL right now. They are not good enough as a roster to compete to go to the playoffs. They need to hope that the Cleveland Browns pass on Shedeur Sanders at that second pick, because they need some sort of right spot in order for the ownership and the fan base to feel like this team is turning in the right direction. As much as it does seem like, hey, they're not in love with Shedeur Sanders, and you know they're trying to create a veteran opportunity for a guy like Russell Wilson to take this strong defense to the playoffs, I read it more so as them freaking out because yeah, they don't think that they can get Shedeur Sanders.
I agree with you to an extent. I just always feel like with that group in particular, their situation and the Browns situation is so similar but so different at the same time. I think Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, it's almost like a conflict of interest in terms of what's best for them and then what is best for the New York Giants. Clearly, the Giants as a franchise, right, Joe, need another guy in there that you can develop and give your franchise hope, as you said, that he can be the long-term guy at the quarterback position. But if you're Joe Shane, if you're Brian Daboll, you got to win football games in 2025. Mm. And I think if Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter are staring you in the face at number three overall, you'd be a damn fool to turn in the card with Shador's name on it.
I think you put it so perfectly. I think in a vacuum, what you just described is what the Giants need to do. They need to take the best player available. This is a quarterback class that is completely void of quarterback talent, and they need to just continue to build the roster for next year where there could be some better quarterback options. It's not a great class, but there's going to be some better options. But because of the desperation of Shane and Daboll, they need to win games. Yeah. They need to do something in order to buy themselves time. So that is going to create as many panic decisions as possible this offseason, like they did with some of the big contracts that they put out there for Javon Holland and Paulson and Devo. And then also here, depending on what they do at quarterback, I think it would be even crazier, and I hope this doesn't come to fruition, it's been put in some mock drafts, is if Jackson Dart ends up being their pick.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, poor Jackson Dart. I always say it, Joe, like, and we've seen this for years, right? We've seen this for years. All these cats coming out are talented, right? If you are a guy that was able to have success at the collegiate level, there is talent there one way or another. In terms of what leads to success in the NFL at the next level, I think it's all about fit. And I don't believe that in a traditional quarterback draft that Jackson Dart is a first-round pick. Feels a lot like Kenny Pickett getting pushed up into the first round a couple of years ago with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But it's about fit, and I think whoever the Giants were to take, even Cam Ward, who I think is almost close to bust-proof. I really like what he has and then the mental makeup of the kid. If he landed in New York, I don't think it'd work. I really do think that that is the worst place that a young signal caller could go right now, because there is that conflict of interest that's in the background.
Right. That's a really strong way of framing it. And Jackson Dart definitely would be a horrendous pick for the Giants, because Jackson Dart has the makings of what you just talked about. He's a Kenny Pickett type guy. He is a guy who played in an offense that set him up to put up a ton of really big stats and to perform really well in college. But most of that does not translate to the NFL. He's not a strong decision maker when he's asked to move on from his initial read. He does not have the quality arm strength that you look for in a quarterback prospect to really challenge defenses and drive the ball into tight windows. He did enough, and I think that at his very best, he could become Derek Carr or he could become Andy Dalton, who were fine players in the NFL.
Right.
But to take him, you know, in the top five, that would be cataclysmically bad if they became that freaked out and that desperate, and Shedeur Sanders went to the Browns and they thought that that was their only option to save their jobs.
As we're running through the pro day circuit, Joe, and you talk to people, what's like one of the most interesting things that you've heard to this point about a prospect or a team?
Yeah, I think that some of the most interesting things that I've caught, you know, talking to folks, is hearing some of the mental makeups of some of these prospects. And it's always, there's some guys that I can't totally speak on, but there's some prospects that you hear about that are that are, you know, head cases that are very difficult to work with. I think that one that really caught my attention at the combine is what has led to the slide for James Pierce Jr. And there's been a bit of a discussion where some people around the Tennessee program don't believe that he's totally bought in. They don't think that he's a guy that has that the motivation to become an all-pro type of a prospect. The tools and the traits are there. They have innate motivation to want to be great. And the NFL wants to draft guys that have the desire to exceed expectations and to improve and to want to be champions. And I think that that was depicted on film because coming into the 2024 season, you saw a kid that had a lot of promise but needed to improve in the run game, that needed to get stronger. He needed to do a lot of things and improve.
Yeah.
And if he took that step forward, he would have been in conversation for a top three pick. He would have been in that same bucket as Abdul Carter. But he stayed the same. He stayed pretty much the same on a loaded Tennessee defense. So a lot of his miscues and his issues were masked by the guys around him. So I think that that has been the biggest one for me is finding out about James Pierce Jr. and him having a little bit of a lack of motivation.
With Pierce, because it's interesting, as a Washington fan, he's someone that, you know, I've obviously been sniffing around because, you know, we need an edge rusher in the worst way. With him, are you not sold on the talent, or is it more so the character makeup of what you're talking about? Like, do you think he can go to a stable situation, Joe, and someone can maximize his talent?
It definitely has nothing to do with the talent because he has everything that you look for in the prototypical edge rusher prospect that we talk about. He's got the bend. He's got an incredible get off. He's got great hand usage. He is a finisher as a pass rusher. He is so overwhelming for offensive tackles, but the deficiencies that he has in the run game and the inconsistencies that he shows anchoring at the line of scrimmage, those are things he needed to work on that he didn't improve upon over this season. I do think, though, that he is a player that if he's placed in the right situation on a team that has a competitive environment with other pass rush prospects or pass rushers in general, just defensive linemen that are going to motivate him, he would eventually succeed. I think a great example of that is the Philadelphia Eagles, who have tapped into a number of guys that were supremely talented but had question marks on if they'd be able to translate in the NFL. Jalen Carter is the perfect example of that, knowing what his background and the car incident that had occurred and a lot of question marks that caused his stock to drop. And they've been able to get the most out of so many guys that did have those off-the-field concerns because it is a great culture and a great fit and a great team overall that knows how to motivate guys.
Talking right now to Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports NFL. You can give him a follow on the X app at Joe DeLeon. I want to stay on the edge rushers for a second here because it's one of those years, man, where I'm seeing guys like Shamar Stewart be mocked in the top 10, and I look at the lack of collegiate production, Joe. Are you concerned about that with some of the top edge rush prospects that don't necessarily have the sack numbers?
I'm absolutely concerned with Shamar Stewart specifically, and he is the epitome of a guy that does not have that sack production. I know some people point to the fact that the defensive scheme that he was playing under Mike Elko asked him to play a responsibility where he needs to constantly be aware and prepared for read option attacks with opposing quarterbacks. But I still saw a player on film that was a freakish, crazy athlete that could have been a 10-plus sack guy if he knew how to finish. He's the type of player who just, it felt like the instincts weren't there. He would get caught up with blockers, not so much so that he wasn't able to get away from offensive linemen. It felt like he was just getting into fights with them on a snap-by-snap basis, and he was winning those fights, but he wasn't going after the quarterback. He wasn't finishing on running backs the way that he could have. I think that there is an untapped potential, and that's why the NFL is oohing and eyeing over him, but I just don't feel as comfortable as most in taking him in the top 10. He's somebody I would much rather take in the middle, most likely the end of the first round, but in the middle of the first round, I'd feel a lot more comfortable.
Joe, if you're one of these quarterback needy teams at the top, talking about New York and Cleveland in particular, who are the crop of those like second tier quarterbacks? Who stands out in that bunch if Cleveland or New York was going to use one of their second round picks on a signal caller?
Yeah, my favorite guy in that second tier is Jalen Milroe, and you really see that there is tremendous potential with him. And I think that when you're drafting a quarterback on day two, you're looking in two directions. You're either drafting a guy that you think is going to be a great backup or a guy that you think is going to end up becoming a potential starter if he gets a little bit of development. Now, Milroe needs a lot of development in his decision-making, but I think that his film has been incredibly mischaracterized. I think that we were so used to seeing him live during these games and some cataclysmic moments happened that games swung in the opposite direction because of a singular mistake. But he's got a really strong arm. He is able to really, really threaten opposing defenses. And he's also a tremendous athlete. I think that he could end up exactly like Jalen Hurts, who when he stepped into the league, he sat for a little bit. He was implemented as a runner in sub-package situations. And then eventually they started to bring him onto the field more and more. And he ended up winning that starting job over Carson Wentz, and the rest was history. I think that with Jalen Milroe, if you give him a chance to sit, you get him into the action early, you give him some rushing plays, he picks up a couple first downs, and then by year two or year three, if you're not satisfied with the sitting starter, you can maybe turn things over to him, and he can ascend and take over with the right offensive coordinator. But outside of that, I'm not a super big Jackson Dart fan. I do like Tyler Shuck, but I feel a little off about him because he is a 25-year-old rookie, yeah, and he needs time to develop and improve. And by the time he actually reaches his peak, which is good enough to be a starter, he might be 27 or 28, which is incredibly old for a quarterback who's not even onto his second contract.
I'm glad that you characterized Shuck the way that you did, because what I continue to hear is, well, did you see Jaden Daniels? Did you see Michael Penix? Did you see Bo Nix? I think anybody that's evaluated those guys would say that they're clearly way further ahead as passers in NFL quarterbacks than Shuck is coming out. So I don't draw that apples to apples comparison there, but it will be fascinating because I think there's going to be somebody that, you know, falls in love with not only his tape, which has some good stuff on it, but some head scratching stuff on it as well, but just the journey that he's been on as a starting quarterback throughout his career, getting benched, going through injury. I'm curious to see how he ultimately, you know, ends up panning out at the NFL level. He's someone I'll have my eye on for sure. The most polarizing guy in this draft, I guess polarizing maybe is the wrong word. The guy that I'm looking most forward to seeing at the next level is Travis Hunter, Joe. I just feel like it's crazy that we're talking about him, Shohei Ohtani, with a walk-off tonight. He is like Shohei Ohtani, brother. Like, that's – I think there's going to be a team – whoever gets him, I hope they're a team that has the kahunas to say, you know what, I'm not going to just limit him to one side of the football. I understand the NFL is different than the collegiate level, but what he did in Boulder, what he did at Jackson State, the stamina that he has, the ball skills that he has, I think you would be really doing your franchise a disservice not to try and use him on both sides.
Yeah, I'm incredibly enamored by what he's going to do in the NFL, and I think that it's almost in a way like a silly debate to try and talk about, like, what is he going to do in the NFL? we don't know until he plays a full season or maybe even more than that, because we need to see if he's capable of playing that many games on both sides of the football. We need to find out if he's, you know, able to contribute and go to meetings on both sides, and if the team that has him feels satisfied with him performing on both sides of the ball. If we were to separate the player, he is the best receiver in the class, and he is the best cornerback in the class. Yeah. At receiver, he is an Odell Beckham Jr. type of a guy with amazing hands, good range, strong route running, just really good instincts. And then as a cornerback, the instincts shine even more, where he's able to play like a receiver when the ball's in the air to take the ball away, and he flies upfield so quickly and so fluidly. I think that his impact in the NFL is going to be huge. The most realistic way that he is going to make his way through the NFL season is going to be probably starting at corner, because it's harder to start getting in the mix every couple drives as a corner, yeah, and then contribute maybe half the amount of normal snaps that a starting receiver would at receiver for an offense with a very limited route tree. But he should play both sides to some extent, and I think that his impact on and off the field for whatever market he lands in, hopefully it's New York, where he can get amplified even further, he is going to be huge for the NFL.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'm just a huge fan of his talent, and I think, you know, as people go through the process and you get to understand who he is as a young man, it's a guy that was a damn near 4.0 student in college, just as locked in as they come in terms of just being all about ball all the time, humble beginnings, not a guy that I think takes this moment for granted. And I know it's ironic. I think some people view his teammate, Shedeur Sanders, that way. But I think with Shedeur, NFL talent evaluators need to become accustomed to this type of prospect coming out, man. I think with this age of social media and guys wanting more exposure in the NIL era, like, you're going to get guys with ego and other things on their mind outside of just being a great NFL quarterback. I wonder from that vantage point, Joe, with Shedeur, how big that is in the process, rather, when it comes to, like, evaluating him. Do teams have concerns about his love for football?
I think that more so if there are concerns, it's just like, hey, is this a guy who is focused, is going to get distracted easily? Is this a guy who is dealing with all these things and these narratives and there's this microscope? Is it going to get to him? And I think that there's been pretty good evidence throughout this entire journey for him that he has battled through all of this better than anybody. They had an awful season 2 years ago, and he still was their best player, and he's tried to uplift his teammates. The one thing that it's been so interesting to me about Shedeur Sanders is that everybody that you talk to that has a connection to him, anyone in the NFL that has done a character deep dive on him, they have all sworn that he is an upstanding young man, and he is the best character out of any of the quarterbacks. So I always find that any of these rumors that have been put out by NFL teams, I feel like that they're just trying to drive his stock down in order to create an opportunity to sign him and hope he doesn't go second overall to the Browns.
Real quick here to wrap up, two more for you. With Brock Bowers having the impact that he had on Vegas's offense, where do you think is, like, the highest you'll see Colston Loveland go? And do you think in terms of, like, a pass-catching target, a tight end that you can build your pass game around, does he have those traits in your mind?
Yeah, I think that Colston Loveland still needs a little bit of development. He is not that same level of dynamics that Brock Bowers was. He is unheard of the way that Brock Bowers has had an early impact. But I think that Colston Loveland, within a year after his first season, could end up being a very high-quality starting tight end. He's got the athleticism and the downfield speed to separate from safeties and linebackers and that size and frame to win in the air. I think that he is that typical vertical threat that NFL offenses can very rarely find in tight end prospects. He kind of reminds me, and it's a little bit of high hopes for him, but he reminds me he could be used the same way that Travis Kelce was used for the Chiefs. It's not a direct comparison to me saying he's going to be a Hall of Famer,
no,
but that same level of linear speed definitely shows up on film.
And then the let you go on this, my friend. I have been watching a whole lot of Omarion Hampton. And the more, I don't know if it's me trying to be a contrarian, but the more and more that I watch him, the more that I think, man, there can't be this sizable gap that everyone's talking about between him and Ashton Jeanty. How do you view Omarion Hampton, and how high do you think he can ultimately go?
Yeah, I think that it's very plausible for him to go in the first round, at the very back end of the first round. And I think that the certain play style that he has is valued by NFL teams, big, bruising, physical, and also extremely explosive. He's tested very well at the NFL Combine. I will stand by this comp. I think that he is the next Marshawn Lynch. I really think that he does everything that Marshawn did coming out of college, which was tested really well. He's got a very similar build, and he loved to run through dudes. And Omarion Hampton does that all the time. I would much rather, and I kind of don't like the projection that Ashton Jeanty goes to the Raiders. I would much rather the Raiders address a different position in the first round, like their offensive line.
Yeah.
And then in the second round, hope that Omarion Hampton's there, or trade back into the end of the first round and then get Omarion Hampton to pair Pete Carroll with the next beast mode.
I think that is a fascinating thought there. And I agree with you. I see everyone mocking Hampton, or excuse me, Jeanty to Vegas. I'm like, no, do what they can to keep Geno upright, man. I think that is the big issue there with Vegas. Joe, I appreciate you making some time for us this evening, man. Continue grinding the tape, and we'll talk to you as we get closer to the draft.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That is Joe DeLeon, ladies and gentlemen, one of the absolute best. He covers the NFL draft and the college football for A to Z Sports NFL. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Joe DeLeon. That is Joe DeLeone. Love catching up with Joe. We'll keep you up to speed on the DC family when we come back. 5:07 left to go in the third quarter. Are the Wizards up? Are they down? We'll get you up to speed with the latest on the Wiz Kids next as we get geared up for the final hour of power coming up momentarily here on Overtime. '76-69. Magic up with 3:13 left to go in the third quarter. Super valiant effort from Washington tonight, man. We mentioned all the guys that they were down coming into this one. Last night, they had a big-time victory at home over Sacramento, a team that was fighting for their lives in terms of their seeding and status in the NBA's play-in tournament. Washington upended them. The Magic, another team entering tonight that is very much alive when it comes to the play-in tournament. They're the seventh seed right now in the Eastern Conference. They got a game and a half lead over Atlanta. So they're probably going to be locked into that play-in tournament no matter what. But Washington down Keyshawn George. Washington down Jordan Poole. Washington down Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Middleton, Rashawn Holmes. Despite all those guys being out, Washington down just seven with 2:41 left to go in the third quarter. So kudos to the Washington Wizards continuing to play tremendous basketball, giving great effort. Love everything about it. The high man for the Wizards tonight, Bub Carrington, who was talky hot last night. 9-14 from the field, 4-6 from the three-point line. He's got 23 points, 4 assists, 7 boards. Alex Saar, 10 points, 5 assists, 5 boards. And Marcus Smart, the other starter that's in double figures for the Wizards, he's got 12. Look, the final 5-6 games of the season here for the Wizards, you don't want them to win too many games because you want to maintain, you know, your status as the worst record in basketball so you can have, you know, the increased lottery odds and have a shot at that number one overall pick. But what they're doing tonight, man, Bob Carrington talked about it last night in the postgame. There is a confidence that this group is playing with, and there's an energy that's infectious that they play with. And I credit, and look at Marcus Smart. As I'm saying it, Marcus Smart dives on the floor. Anthony Gill takes a hard foul. And now the Wizards going back to the free throw line. There is this toughness, this physicality, this effort that they are playing with. And I give all the credit in the world to Marcus Smart, to Chris Middleton, the veterans that they acquired at the trade deadline. They didn't want to come here to get embarrassed and lose by 30 every damn night. It's not who they are. It's not in their character. Say what you want. Whether they'll be here long-term or not, it's to be determined. But they certainly have had an impact on the way that this team plays. I'm super excited to watch it, man. Wizards at the free throw line. Anthony Gill's about to go to the free throw line. They're reviewing a foul right now to see whether or not it's a flagrant. Marcus Smart dove on the floor, saved the ball into Anthony Gill, and then Gary Harris. You familiar with JBL, Metal Chris? You familiar with John Bradshaw Layfield? Formerly known as just Bradshaw.
JBL's a speaker company.
One half of the APA. The reason I bring that up, Gary Harris just hit a clothesline from hell on Anthony Gill. Look at this. I mean, just egregious. Now, I know I'm probably hyperbolizing it a little bit. But, hey, man, I love the reaction of the Wizards teammates. Man, everybody runs over to AG. They're picking that guy up. Love it, love it, love it. There's a story I want to get to at the top of the 9 o'clock hour here on Overtime that is going to make your head spin. But before we get to that, the Wizards roommate at Capital One Arena, the Washington Capitals, they were in action last night against the Hurricanes. And now the Caps have lost 4 out of 5 as they lost 5-1 to Carolina. Alex Ovechkin lit the lamp. But outside of that, outside of goal number 892, it has been a real struggle for the Caps. They lost 5-1 to Carolina. They got a W over Boston a couple of nights ago, 4-3. Then they lost 8-5 to the Sabres, 4-2 to Minnesota, then 3-2 in what was a slobber knocker against the Winnipeg Jets, the team that has the most points in the NHL. As the Caps get geared up for postseason play, they got an opportunity to get right. The hockey gods are on their side because they haven't played well. They've lost 4 out of 5, like I mentioned. But you got Chicago coming up. You got Chicago on the docket. Blackhawks are terrible. They play Chicago tomorrow night at home at Cap One Arena. If Alex Ovechkin is able to net a hat trick, tomorrow against the lowly Blackhawks, that would be the record. After Friday, they play. They have Saturday off. They're playing Sunday afternoon in a matinee contest against the Islanders. And then after that game, they come back home for another matchup against Carolina. Here was the other thing about the Carolina game last night. Was it Connor McMichael that got slammed to the ice last night?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to whip somebody's ass watching it. Seriously, it was a here's the thing. I don't want to say it's dangerous, but like, I don't know the, you know how there's unspoken rules about certain things, like in the NBA, you don't lay the ball up at the end of regulation if you're already up and things like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In hockey, what's the unspoken rules about the fights? Because he slung his ass down on the ice, and it looked like he was about to hit the back of his head. That's what I got worried about. I got a little squeamish.
It was kind of nasty, but this is the thing I was saying, that Tom Wilson has had so many things slide for the Caps.
A dirty, dirty dog.
That it's hard for the Caps to complain about it when it happens to one of ours. It's just a little tough. I love the Caps, don't get me wrong.
It was chippy.
But they've had enough things slide with Tom Wilson that they can't really complain. I don't know.
For sure. It was chippy. The interesting thing about it, they see Carolina again at home next Thursday. So all the hubbub and hoopla from the Panthers about we're tougher than you, we're bigger and badder than you, slinging Connor McMichael to the ice. Caps looking to get it back in blood, baby. I'm telling you. Caps looking to get it back in blood. I don't understand this. Well, I guess I do understand. Carolina right now fighting their tail off as they try to, you know, secure a wild card spot. But the Caps finished down the stretch. They got a couple opportunities. The game against Carolina, you got two against the Islanders who are sliding down the standings. You want to be playing your best hockey as you get geared up for the postseason.
I mean, I wonder if the Ovechkin thing is just a big distraction right now, because it's like, you know, they only scored one goal last night, and it's Ovi, and it's like, are they just not playing their normal game because they're just trying to get over this frigging goal thing?
They played great against Boston the other night.
I know, but they're feeding him the puck and no one else, it seems, sometimes. And maybe that's just taking them away from their game.
I mean, you may have something to that. I don't know how true that actually is, but it's a good point. It could be possible, especially when you're, like you said, Chris. I mean, this is something, this record is Emmitt Smith's rushing record.
I think it's bigger than that.
Jerry Rice's receiving record. Like, it's in that same ilk of, like, I don't know if hockey fans that were watching the sport early 2000s, when Gretzky set that record and broke that record, did it feel like one of those records that'll never be broken?
Well, I mean, Gordie Howe, you got to understand, too, Gordie Howe had played until, like, his 50s. This guy, it wasn't.
Wait, hold on, Chris. Hold on.
So when Gretzky broke that record, it was also like a huge thing because it wasn't just like.
He played until his 50s?
Yeah, so yeah.
At a certain point, your old ass needs to get up off the ice. There's no way you're skating around at 50 years old.
He played with his kids, two of his kids on the same team at one point. Yeah.
Am I confusing Gordie Howe with Jágr?
Yeah, Yager was later.
He also played.
Yeah, Yager's the Czech guy that played on the Penguins for a while. Came to the Cats for a bit.
He also played a long,
Yager
long time,
Yager did play for
too.
A very, very long time, but Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, played till he was like 55 or something, man.
I got to look that up. But
his, so his stats are weird, though, because back then they had the AHL and the NHL.
The merger happened.
Well, no, so part of it was like he played on, I think he was like on the Whalers in the AHL for a while, and those stats didn't count for the NHL. But then they got merged into the NHL, and he was back in the NHL again for a few years. It was like
did
back and forth. It's really weird the way his stats are counted. But the reason he was the all-time goal scorer is because he had played for so friggin' long. You know, I mean, this guy was way longer than anyone else. And the fact that Wayne Gretzky broke that record was still a huge deal because it was like, you know, this guy had played in his 50s, and here's Gretzky doing like in his 30s. You know, it's like that's an insane accomplishment. And so no one really thought that anyone then beat Gretzky's record because beating Gordie Howe's record was already insane. And so now here's Ovechkin has already broken Gordie Howe's and now about to break Gretzky. Just put a lot of that in perspective for you.
And the, it's nuts. And it's why I was saying it earlier this morning on the Infinity Sports Network that I think if we're going to make a Mount Rushmore of like sports athletes, Ovi's got to be on. I think what he is doing.
For DC, no question.
No, not even DC. I'm talking about all time.
All right.
He's got this record that I think is going to be super hard to be broken. And then the other crazy part about it is, like, he missed, was it 6 weeks earlier this year? Because of the broken leg that he had, man. For him to come back and still put up. What did he score last night? Was that goal number 40? Or 39 last night for Alex Ovechkin. I mean, he's doing the damn thing. It's been super impressive to watch, man. And I hope that, you know, this ends in a Stanley Cup run. Like, that would be the icing on the cake for this, is Ovechkin gets the record, and then the Caps, who currently right now second most points in the NHL, one behind Winnipeg.
I kind of hope they don't get the President's Trophy because
it's
every time they do, they bum out in the playoffs. And so I know it's just a superstitious thing.
No, I get it. It's real. We've seen it happen time and time and time again. Jimmy in Silver Spring wants to chime in on another record that I think is absolutely bonkers as well. Jimmy, what you got for us, brother?
Hey, man, how you doing? The only unbreakable left probably in the world is Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak. That record will never be broken.
I think Starlin Marte is like, oh no, it's Matt Olson right now is the active leader with 492, Jimmy.
And yeah, man, Cal's who cares?
That's almost 2,000 more. Like that's crazy.
It's funny you talk about it. If I'm not mistaken, this is the 30th anniversary. The Orioles are doing it up on September 5th and 6th. This year. I remember those dates.
Okay.
Because like I said, this is the last record that will never be broken. No one will ever break Cal Ripken's record.
It's a couple
of manager, no manager is gonna I'm talking about the consecutive game streak.
Oh, for
no
sure.
No manager is gonna ever ever pin somebody in for 2,500 straight games. Love the show, man.
Appreciate you as always, brother. 1-800-636-1067. Jimmy brings up a good point. There's other
unbreakable records. Cal's is nuts, don't get me wrong. There are other unbreakable records, too, I think.
Emmitt Smith, no one's going to break Emmitt Smith's record.
Not the way they're playing running backs anymore. Yeah.
Derrick Henry's the active leader. Jerry Rice with damn near 23,000 yards receiving. The Gretzky assist
points will probably never be broken. Another goal-scoring thing for him that was insane. I know a lot about Gretzky. I read his biography as a kid.
Really?
Did a big report on it and stuff. So I was a big Gretzky fan growing up. And anyway, one of the things that I think is crazy that will probably never be broken either. Mm-hmm. So originally in the old days of the NHL, they only played 50-game seasons. And, you know, Maurice the Rocket Richard is who they named the trophy you get if you score the most goals in a season. It's the Maurice Rocket Richard trophy. It's named after him because he was kind of the first of these like hotshot goal scorers of all-time level. But they only play 50 games, so you don't really know how to compare how he would have scored in an 80-game season like they're playing now.
That's very true.
So one of the milestones they use is how fast you score 50 goals. because that can still be calculated.
Right.
And he was the first one to do 50 and 50, which was, like, at that time, very insane. And
wait,
still,
50 goals and 50? So he scored damn near
in a 50-game season, yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wayne Gretzky did it one season in 38 games, which I don't think that's ever going to be broken.
Wait, he scored 50 and 30?
Yeah, that was the year he scored 92 goals in a season in an 80-game season, which is still insane also. But the pace that he was at of that first 50, that first 38 games, to score 50 goals in 38 games, the first 38 games of a season, I don't think anyone, like, it's just that scoring rate is insane. Like,
yeah. we'll keep the conversation on greatness when we come back. Final hour of power on the other side of this break. We'll look at some of the unbreakable records in the world of sports next there on The Fan.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.